yourselves.
Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
You all right?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Look, if you hate cops just because they're cops, the next time you get in trouble, call a crackhead.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
Then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to Lars Larson Show, and welcome to Conspiracy Theory Thursday, and I think I've got a good one for you. It's playing out right in front of us, and let me tell you how it came about. Teachers last fall have demanded more money. Now, that's happened in a bunch of places in both Oregon and Washington, but in the Portland public schools, teachers demanded more money, and then the district decided to pay them more money than the district knew it was going to have. A lot more money. About $100 million more than they knew they were going to have. So they made a promise to the unions to settle a strike that shouldn't have happened to begin with. And they said, we will pay you more money than we know we have. Now, what did that do? Check me if you disbelieve any of this, because it's all factual. That forced cuts on the schools. And the teachers confirm that those cuts to fund their big raise that they were granted by an idiotic school board is going to hurt the students. It has hurt them. It's going to hurt them some more. So now, what are the unions demanding now? They are demanding no cuts. We will take no cuts. Now, I want to remind you of something that was said last fall about teachers, about funding, because the teachers today are saying, you have to get us the money. Go to Salem and get the money. Take a listen.
I'm asking everyone to stretch with the resources they have to meet the goals that we all share. When it comes to education funding, this is really a conversation for 2025.
Yeah, for 2025. In other words, don't count on any more money from Salem. So the unions already know the money isn't there. The money to pay the demands that they made and they got, more than $100 million, more than the district knew it had. So the district is put in a spot where it has to cut personnel. Only now the unions are making more demands. We demand that you pay us more and that you don't find the savings by cutting personnel. So what's going to happen? I know what's going to happen. They're going to deliver bad education for your kids. They're doing that already. They're going to get the big raise that they were granted. The money isn't there, and the unions are now saying, don't you dare cut anybody to make sure you can fund our raise. Now, that's how crazy things have become. But welcome to Conspiracy Theory Thursday. I'll get into that more in just a moment, but first, welcome to the program, and welcome to the Radio Northwest Network, a quarter century of serving the Pacific Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho with honestly provocative talk. And if you want to join the conversation, you're always welcome at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you happen to be a naysayer, we're going to put you right to the front of the line at 866-439-5277. Easy to send emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And our poll on X, what used to be called Twitter, has to do with the state of Washington, although the state of Oregon is doing things that are almost as crazy in the same lane. But consider this, and this is the question. Should states give preference to grant pot licenses to people because they have black skin? And you say, Lars, what insane part of government is proposing that? Well, the answer is the Washington State Liquor and Cannabis Board. They are amending their rules for how they grant pot licenses in the state of Washington. They say they have to have more diversity. Well, you know, diversity is the big hot button for all the progressives out there. So they say when it comes to pot shops and who gets the license to run the pot shop and make money with a state license and a state legalized product like marijuana, what they say is the idea, and this is from the Center Square, the idea is to encourage minority ownership and remove barriers to licensing, including, wait for this, criminal history related to drug use or incarceration. So in other words, the state of Washington says we have to encourage black people who live in Washington to get into the pot business. And why this is something the Liquor and Cannabis Board should be promoting if there's somehow a shortage of pot shops, and the last time Tina and I drove around the state of Washington, the state of Oregon, we didn't see any shortage of pot shops. I mean, there might not be enough state-licensed liquor outlets, but there are plenty of pot shops. In some towns, there's one on every single corner. But then Liquor and Cannabis says, well, we've got to do something woke and politically correct. So we want to not just encourage more people of color to get into the pot business, but we want to change the rules. So depending on your skin color, you will have a better chance with dark skin, not as good a chance with pale skin to get a pot license. I don't think that's legal. I don't think it's constitutional. I think it violates all kinds of laws. I mean, I'm a small employer. I've got three great producers. Do you know what would happen to me if I said, well, the next producer I hire is going to be a black female producer? That right there is a violation of federal employment law. It's a violation of state employment law. It's a violation of the civil rights of everybody who might apply for that job. And what the people who are applying for licenses ought to say, if you start to differentiate and you give extra points, and that's how they're planning to do it, to say, if you are a person of color, you have a better chance of being granted a pot license than somebody with pale skin. That is blatant, out-and-out discrimination. And if Bob Ferguson wasn't so busy running for Washington state governor, he'd actually take this on. That, and if he wasn't a crazy left-wing progressive, he'd say, you can't differentiate. You can't have a state agency that says you have a better chance of getting this license from the state if you have dark skin, and you have no chance or less chance if you have white skin. That's illegal. So I'm going to put the question up on X. Should states give preference for pot licenses to people based on their skin color? I would answer that one no. You can answer any way you like. You'll find the question at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Always brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Now consider what's going on, though, with the teachers and the unions. What they've said to you: you taxpayers are getting a bad result from public schools. Anywhere from 20 to 25% of the kids simply drop out of school altogether. Total enrollment is down more than 10% in public schools, and that's not just the pandemic. That's because an awful lot of parents have sensibly said, I'm not leaving my kids in that indoctrination factory that you call a K-12 government-run school. So the teachers walk in and they say, we're demanding more money. Now, we produce a crappy result collectively. I'm not disparaging individual teachers. I'm just saying that when you have a system where 25% of the kids drop out and don't graduate at all, and 50% of the kids who stay behind make the minimum marks to be considered proficient, and the other 50% do not, and the school system grants a diploma to both the kids who didn't make the marks and the kids who did make the marks, and it doesn't matter if you can read, write, or count, you're going to get a diploma because it means continued employment for the unions. And then they demand a wage that is too big for the district to pay, and this is happening all over Oregon and Washington. And then when the district says, then we're going to be forced to cut people, you say, and we're not going to let you cut people either. That's nuts. The Northwest Nonsense is coming up next. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lots of folks worry about their firearms, but Lars doesn't have to worry about Biden taking his guns. He stores them upstairs. This is the Lars Larson Show.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead fish wrapper or mainstream media bias.
Hey, what should we think when the President of the United States threatens to punch his opponent in the face? We know the already rapid mental decline of Joe Biden has actually accelerated quite a bit. It happened yesterday during a speech on camera in front of NABTU, N-A-B-T-U, the group that represents North America's building trade unions. Here's his quote. Think about the guys you grew up with that you like to get in a corner and give them a straight left. And that's not the first time, by the way. 5 years ago, Biden told an audience he'd beat the hell out of Trump if they were both still in high school. Well, that being about two-thirds of a century ago, probably not likely to happen. But the thought is what counts, isn't it, folks? Anytime they get the chance, Joe's political friends love to accuse those of us on the MAGA side of the aisle, like me, of violent rhetoric. I guess the Democrat Party has double standards for its own. And then Joe had one of his, well, regular teleprompter failures. Like Ron Burgundy in the movie Anchorman, Biden reads whatever's on that teleprompter in front of him, no matter what it says. So when he reached the line, four more years, which, by the way, Joe delivered with sort of a question mark sound at the end, the script said pause. I'm pretty sure the scriptwriters wanted him to hold up while his audience cheered him on. No, Joe just read the stage directions out loud. That pretty well sums up this point in his presidency, doesn't it? Do as the people really calling the shots tell you to do. Read the damn speech and you'll get an ice cream cone. Off Twitter, this comment, Joe Biden has claimed that he cut the $34 trillion national debt by $7 billion, $1.4 trillion, $1.7 trillion, and that he cut the $1.7 trillion in half. In other words, he doesn't give just one answer to a question. He claims he's cut the national debt by either $7 billion or $1.7 trillion. Take your pick. And, of course, none of that is actually true. And that's what happens when a lifelong chronic liar meets cognitive decline. Our question of the day is posed by Carly Ralston. And believe me, I've been trying for weeks to get a serious answer to this question. But Carly writes in and she says, hello, I've heard on the news Trump decided not to put his bio in the Oregon voters pamphlet because it's Biden country. I find that extremely hard to believe considering just how aggressively President Trump is about winning this election. What are your thoughts? Who do we Republicans contact to get to the bottom of this? Thanks for your time, Carly. I have literally been trying for weeks to find out why. Was it an oversight that the Trump campaign simply said they goofed, they missed the deadline, but they did not submit a voter's pamphlet statement on behalf of President Trump? Now, do I think that was a good idea? No. And if they did it deliberately because they said, well, Oregon and Washington are probably going to go to Joe Biden anyway because the voters are just that foolish, still, you put the voter's pamphlet statement in. Do I know why? No. Am I trying to get a serious answer from the Trump campaign? Yes, but as you might have noticed, he's a bit busy lately. Let's go to the Daily Grill now.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe you're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now.
So, if you heard the poll on X today and you thought it was kind of foolish to hand out pot store licenses based on skin color, if you thought that was dumb, this one takes the cake. How much sense does it make for the state of Washington to hand out EV rebates? In other words, a rebate of up to $5,000 if you will buy or lease a battery-powered car. Except they're going to aim this at the poor. So in other words, Washington State is going to tell poor people, hey, if you go out and buy one of the most expensive cars that's on the road and it has to be brand new, or if you'll lease it for 2 or 3 years, we'll give you some money. It's either a dirty trick or it's just crazy. I don't know which, but it's $48 million of your dollars, so I thought I'd tell you about it. Today's best email, but you can always send more to talk at Lars Larson comes in from Tony in Kitsap County. Hey, Lars, I'm one of the Washingtonians who got a chicken check from Bob Ferguson. Not sure why. It's been many years since my family has had canned tuna or chicken. The check was from the Attorney General's office with Bob Ferguson's name on it. The accompanying letter was from his office and touted his work at suing companies for the benefit of Washington residents. It reeked of something his campaign would have put together. And they did, by the way. I recently got another letter from his office reminding me of the check and that I hadn't cashed it. So I went out and cashed it shortly after. This letter also touted the hard work he's been doing suing companies and getting money for Washingtonians. I can't remember ever receiving any type of correspondence from the Attorney General's office in my life. And here I get two letters within a few months of each other. I'm sure it's because he's running for governor, and that's what really bothers me. I feel this lawsuit money should have gone into the Treasury to be distributed however the legislature deemed. It shouldn't be a slush fund for buying votes for Bob Ferguson. That is, at the very least, unethical. I also wonder why it's not against the law. Signed, Tony in Kitsap County. I got to tell you, we talked about this when the news of it first broke, I think, more than a month ago. And here's what we know. We know that Bob Ferguson could have gone to the social service agencies of the state of Washington, DHS among them. He could have said, will you tell me the poorest people in the state of Washington and distribute the money to them? That's not what he did. He went to an outside contractor and paid your tax money to get a special list to send out those chicken checks and tuna checks for, and we're still waiting for an explanation of it. Glad to be with you on a Thursday. Always happy to take your calls on the Radio Northwest Network. Let's start with Ron. Hey, Ron, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Well, Lars, I'm going to tell you, to go through and use this DEI stuff again, it's a Bernie Sanders moment, isn't it?
It is.
Keep
it truly
stirring
is.
The pot. Keep stirring the pot. Keep using race to divide, to disincentivize our people. Instead of being giving them a whatever, shouldn't be given no subsidy at all, in my opinion, to get them in businesses. But you know what it boils down to? What really insults me? I work hard over the last 46 years from being a foster child at 11 years old to where I'm at today. Yep. My name and honor is given, a lifetime credit card, as I call it, I tell my godchildren, by merit, by hard work, by humility, and by learning from my elders what the Republic is about. And if by them going through it, undermining the situation, it goes against all the values of what Reverend King says, be judged by the content of your character, not by the color of your skin.
Absolutely right. And by the way, Ron, imagine the reaction if somebody went down for a business license of any kind in Oregon or Washington and said, hey, they turned me aside and they said they won't give me a license because I'm black. You'd say, well, that's absolutely wrong. You've got to bring some action against that because, you know, any state lawmaker would say that's illegal. You can't discriminate that way. Now imagine somebody saying, hey, I got a license to open a pot store. Well, how'd you get that? Well, I walked in and they said they were giving me the license because I'm black, and that if I'd been white, they would not have given the license to me. So they're handing out these licenses and giving a preference based on skin color. Whether that's based on you being white or black or brown or any other color, the state of Washington, I think, is violating the law. It's violating the Constitution, and they need to be corrected on it. Glad to be with you on a Thursday. I'll get back to your calls in a moment. 866-HEY-LARS. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com.
The Lars Larson Show. The 40th President of the United States always knew where to put the blame.
You have blamed mistakes of the past, and you blame the Congress. Does any of the blame belong to you?
Yes, because for many years I was a Democrat.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you on Conspiracy Theory Thursday, and I'll get back to your calls here in a moment at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to at LarsLarson.com. And Amy Ryan Corser joins me now, running for Oregon's 4th Congressional District. Amy, welcome to the program. I've got a few questions to ask you about what Congress is doing right now.
Hi, Lars. Thank you so much for having me. You're one of my favorites to hang out with.
Well, I appreciate that. Can you tell people where to find your website so they're going to know how they can help your campaign if they're so inclined?
You bet. Everything I have, social media, is amyfororegon.com.
Okay, very good. Let me ask you about this. Let's start with the deal they just cut to send tens of billions of dollars to Ukraine, to Taiwan, to Israel, and do not one damn thing about the southern border. Your take on that?
Okay. That's right. Well, first of all, thank you for that question, because I think it's one of the first and foremost of today. Although, as you know, every day is a new challenge, right?
No kidding.
I will tell you, I would have been a strong no vote on that. Speaker Johnson, I'm pretty disappointed in Speaker Johnson right now. Not only did that funding bill that they just passed with his direction, and of course, he's been the deciding vote many times. I don't know if people have recognized that, but it funds the weaponization of our government. It funds does nothing to fund our border. It does nothing to stop the daily invasion at our border. And it fully funds full-term abortion, DEI, and it also funds trans ideology for their truth from our youth, as young as 12 years old. And guess what? We are in a complete crisis. So I believe it's really time right now for leadership. I want to see the House win. I want to see the White House win. And we have to win the Senate to restore our nation and get it back to some sanity and greatness again to secure the safety of Americans.
Well, Amy, I only want to challenge you this way. I always hear this talk from every single candidate. I'm not saying you're wrong, but sure. I would have voted no on it as well. And we say that sitting right here. And you know that once you get back there on Capitol Hill, I don't think you get seduced by these jokers. I think you get threatened. And the party says, we need you to get on board. And if you don't, you're not going to get committee memberships. You're not going to get a committee chairmanship. We're not going to support the stuff you're going to bring to us. And they're going to put the screws to you. And my question, I'm going to start asking every member of, as they run, are you strong enough to stand up against that? Or will you be telling us, well, you know, we had to vote for this because it had to be done? Because it didn't get done. I mean, they wanted it last fall, and they only got it 6 months later. And if you can block them for 6 months, why not block them beyond that?
Right. I'm so glad you brought this up and that I didn't have to, so that you can be the negative Nelly, because you're 100% spot on. And I want to give you first of all, to answer your question, yes, I am strong enough. And here's why. I have sat down with RNCC. I have sat down with multiple people in D.C. As you know, this is not my first run. I feel stronger than ever to fight for the people. And I'll tell you why. I sat down and I was given a pledge to sign for McCarthy as Speaker of the House. I chose not to. I said, no, I will not do this. I am unbeholden. I am about the people. I am for America first. And I will not cower or cater to these ideologies. And I'll tell you why. It's all funded. It's all about follow the money. It's not about the people. And that's where we have failed. And I will not. And you have my word right here. You can replay it again when I'm your congresswoman. I will not back off.
Well, I'm glad to have that, because, you know, there are times, Amy, I literally think I need this on tape so that later on, if she goes south on us, we're going to remind everybody. Now, second issue, that's what you'd vote no on. I want to know why there isn't anybody that I've seen on the House side saying, we need to tell these colleges, if you are not willing to make college campuses, either public or private, safe. And this is both the private colleges, because colleges like Columbia get about $500 million a year from the U.S. government. Harvard gets about $625 million. And I think it would be relatively easy to say, if you college presidents are not willing to take control of what's going on there, and there are bad things going on there, the people are being blocked from campus, the college is saying it's unsafe to go to our college, then you're going to lose your federal money. And it's simple as that. I don't see anybody on the Republican side making that kind of threat, and I think they should.
Right. Well, and I will tell you, I will follow up with what my opinion is on that. We have had a lot of student bailouts too, and I've heard you speak about that. But also, we're not holding anybody accountable. We have the purse strings federally to hold accountable, and pick a topic, because that's exactly where we need to go. Not only tariffs, not only holding people accountable, but guess what? These people that are protesting, and I did get protested by Hamas recently, just so you know, we're getting ready to enter a whole new a new era of elections and with our general that we've never seen before. So I will tell you, it's the same bad actors that were, Black Lives Matter. They're all funded. It's all very organized. It's very progressive. We have not had the leadership in Congress to stand up and say, and we have a few, don't get me wrong, I'm not labeling them all, but we do not stand up, and Oregon doesn't. We don't stand up and say, wait a minute, this is not only is it not right, we can't have the student bailiffs. And guess what? A lot of those people, they're not even students on our campus. And if you're a student and you're here on a foreign visa, I have a plane in your bag packed and you're out. We cannot tolerate. We have to have, we're beyond tough love. We're beyond legal, lawful. Yeah, this speech, hate speech, is not the First Amendment. I'm all about the First Amendment. As you know, we've talked about it before, Lars. I'm all about accountability. And let's, you know what? All of these Hamas protesters, all of these Palestinian protesters, let's put them on a plane and see how long they live. I'm a betting girl. Let's see how that works out for them. Because
see, and I want to hold parents responsible, too, because at least some of these kids are going to these fancy colleges because mom and dad or grandma and grandpa wrote a check. Some of them are there on loans, some on scholarships. But if I were a parent writing checks, you know, even for my granddaughter years from now, to go to college. Mm-hmm. And I saw, you're not taking advantage of the 90 grand a year or 70 grand a year it costs to go to Columbia, but you're out there protesting the streets. Guess what? Your checks just stopped. I would do it as a parent. Right. I'd do it as a grandparent. And I want Congress to do it. And I don't know why the Republican Party won't do it. Last issue, and that is TikTok. Now, people keep calling it a ban. I've explained it's not a ban. TikTok is not going to go away. But it may not continue to be Chinese communist owned. Just as we don't allow radio and TV stations in America to be owned by foreign nationals, was the vote to so-called ban TikTok, you know, understanding that TikTok is not going to shut down. It may end up under new ownership, but it'll be the same thing. And I think calling it a ban is dishonest. Would you have voted for, you know, no foreign ownership of TikTok?
This is a great topic. And I'll be honest, I think I would have been one of your naysayers because I would have not supported a ban. And I'll tell you why. I think it sets a precedent and a slippery slope for against our First Amendment. You know, I do think we need to protect, and we have a right to make amendments, and we can enforce laws as a Congress that we can go a different direction. But right now, if we're not going to hold accountable our own free speech, look at our
Amy, I may have to hold you into another segment, but I want to make it clear. Nobody's stopping anybody's free speech. And if you think that if ByteDance has to sell that company to somebody else, it's got 170 million people signed up for it. It's worth a ton. It's worth an estimated $200 million. They are not going to shut that down. But are you telling me that we interfere with free speech because we don't allow foreign nationals to own American radio and TV?
No, I don't. I think we interfere in free speech when we set a precedent so that we're not holding Facebook to account. I mean, it's all of them across the board. I think it sets a precedent. And my concern is that, yes, we can make laws and follow through and Congress, but we as a nation, we're spying on our own people. We don't hold anybody, our own nation, to account. That's my frustration. It needs
but
to be.
But you would have voted no on the TikTok so-called ban.
As of today, I would have been a no vote. But that's because I feel like we could do it differently.
Okay.
And I am
going to ask you to stay for will you stay for another segment, Amy? Because I got to get the clarification on how you would do it differently. But that's Amy Ryan Corser. She's running for Congress in Oregon's 4th Congressional District. We invite Democrats every single week. Not a one of them once in a while. Every once in a while we get a Democrat, but not very often. It's Conspiracy Theory Thursday on the Radio Northwest Network.
Nixon was wrong about a lot of things, but he's right about this.
People have got to know whether or not their president's a crook.
What say you, Joe Biden? This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. I held over congressional candidate Amy Ryan Corser, who's running for Oregon's 4th Congressional District. I'm going too fast, Amy. I'm sorry about that. Look, let's start with some givens. American media does what American media does because it's private companies. Do TV and radio stations have a federal license to operate a transmitter? Yes, but the federal government does not regulate their content, nor does our federal government have an arm to reach in to anything that social media companies in America gather information-wise and hand it over lock, stock, and barrel to the U.S. government. ByteDance, which owns TikTok, had to agree to operate in China, had to say to the Chinese government, anytime you want to know anything that we have gathered about our 170 million American, you know, users of TikTok, they will hand it over, and I can almost guarantee you they're doing it right now. They're giving all that data to the Chinese Communist government. That's number one. Number two, the Chinese Communist government can tell them, we want certain messages pushed in America right now. We want you to push, I don't know, battery cars or solar panels, things that benefit China. The U.S. government has engaged in pushing social media here in this country, and it was wrong, and they got caught, and we're doing what we can to stop it. But this is allowing a foreign government to own social media in our country when they don't allow our social media to operate there, and they have a window into America to spy on Americans, and you're telling me you'll solve it another way. I'm glad to hear it, but Amy, tell me how. How are you going to solve that?
Okay, great. So, I don't want to pretend that I have all of the answers. It's just kind of my ideas and thinking forward as we, I think
don't
we can
beat
do
around
better.
The bush. How are we going to, you so, said there's no, another way to solve it. How is it
I
to
do,
solve
I do. Well, let's start with holding China accountable for everything that they're doing against the United States. We don't do that. Our Biden administration has failed us completely. So the
no, but
when
stop,
you talk
stop,
about
hold on.
Media,
Joe Biden can hold China because he has the foreign policy power. That's what the president mm-hmm. does. The Congress controls mm-hmm. the laws. The Congress passed a mm-hmm. law saying we don't want a foreign-owned social media here. And as I pointed out, we don't allow it for TV. We don't allow it for radio. We don't allow it for certain industries that are defense oriented. We don't allow them to be foreign owned. So when the Congress has the power to fix this one, they can't fix what Dimwit Joe is not doing with dictator Xi in China. They can fix TikTok by saying you can't be foreign owned anymore. And you tell me that's not the way to do it. Tell me how you do it. And don't just tell me we got to fix every other problem in the world first before we do this one. How do we fix the TikTok issue?
Sure. And my point wasn't that it should be first. My point is that we need to hold China to account. And that is by making new laws. You're right. Congress has the federal purse that we can make these laws and we can hold them to account with amendments. With
how do you hold TikTok to account?
We haven't done that.
How do you hold ByteDance and TikTok to account when they're not accountable to anybody but Beijing, Amy?
Well, but that's this exact same thing as making a law and saying banning TikTok. Like they
no,
they
it's
also,
not banned. But see, I'm going to tell you, something, Amy, if you've bought into the lie that it's a ban, it's not a ban. It's saying you can't be foreign owned. So the radio stations I work for, if one of the owners came in and said, "Hey, this Chi-Com guy just offered us 10 times the value of this radio station to sell it to him," he would quickly be informed, you can't do that. It's against the law. Well, why don't we want foreign countries, especially evil countries like China, to own our media? And the answer is because it's a really bad idea. It used to be in days before the internet when there was a revolution in a country. Amy, you know the answer to this. What was the first thing that the rebels took over when they did a coup? The TV and radio stations and the newspaper. Why? Because once you control that, you control all of it. I want to know why you would want to continue to allow China to control a social media in America when we don't allow it for radio and TV.
Okay. And again, my answer is very simple. And it's not that I disagree with you. It's that I feel like the First Amendment, we're on a slippery slope to protecting American citizens and also holding China accountable. But we're not holding them accountable for our land purchases. We're not holding them accountable for our debt. We're not holding them accountable.
You're not telling me the other way you'd fix this. You said we've got all these other issues that need to be resolved. How do you resolve a Chinese communist-owned TikTok in America? You've said that the wrong answer is to say it can't be foreign-owned. And I've said that is the right answer. So tell me how you would solve it. And all you say is, well, solve every other problem that we've got. I'm in favor of that, but I don't say we can't solve this one now by saying you can no longer be foreign-owned. I mean, the reason Rupert Murdoch became an American citizen was because he couldn't own radio and TV stations in America when he wanted to come in and transition from newspapers to radio and TV, and he built Fox. But he couldn't have done it, or he couldn't have done it with TV and radio stations, unless he became an American. We're allowing a foreign country to control a social media, to flood our country with messages in an election year, and to scoop up data on Americans and hand it right to the Politburo in Beijing. How do you solve that?
Well, and I agree. And I think that's the problem is, and that was my point in the very beginning, is that with the issue, it's not just TikTok, it's Facebook, it's all of social media.
Those are American-owned, and they don't answer to Beijing.
Right, but they answer to us in Congress. They have had hearings and, of course, judicial hearings on how they're run. And I think we should hold China to the same accounts that we hold our American companies to.
And how does Congress go about controlling the Chinese Communist Party? Because I'm not aware that Congress has that authority. But Amy Ryan Corser is running for Oregon's Congressional District Number 4, and this is the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson.
Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Live. This is
is the Lars Larson Show.
Look, if you hate cops just because they're cops, the next time you get in trouble, call a crackhead.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
Then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's Conspiracy Theory Thursday. At least we've always called it that because it seems to be the day we have the most conspiracy theories. But I wanted to talk about the homeless problem. I mean, obviously it's before the U.S. Supreme Court this week. They heard arguments in a case that may actually upend another case called Boise. And that one essentially gave every blue city in America an excuse for doing next to nothing about people living on the streets. Most of them drug and alcohol addicted. A few of them are mentally ill, or they may be mentally ill and drug and alcohol addicted and have a combination of problems. But I wanted to get Tim Sandifer on, who's vice president of legal affairs at the Goldwater Institute. That means he's a lawyer. Tim, welcome back to the program. How are you?
Thanks for having me back.
You blame an awful lot of this problem on America's courts. Am I overstating that?
No, that's correct. The Ninth Circuit's rulings, both in the Martin versus Boise case about 5 or 6 years ago, and then this current case called Johnson versus Grants Pass, both of those cases have more or less created a constitutional right of homeless people to sleep in public parks or on the sidewalks or and so forth, and have largely made it impossible for city officials who want to clean up these neighborhoods. Made it impossible for them to do so, or has given an excuse to city officials who don't want to do their jobs, given them a handy and convenient excuse to say, well, there's nothing we can do about the homeless situation downtown because the Ninth Circuit won't let us do anything about it.
Yeah, so this may fix it, depending on what the court decides in the Johnson versus Grants Pass, but why are the courts doing this? And I mean, some of it you even write about where you say, or you wrote this for the Wall Street Journal, you said that the Supreme Court precedent was it's cruel and unusual for punishing somebody for something they can't help doing, which is living on the streets. And yet they can help doing it. You could say, well, you want to get into a shelter? If it's a high barrier shelter, then you got to quit the heroin, the, you know, the methamphetamine, the fentanyl, stop drinking and get in the shelter. And if you want to do what everybody else does, show up for a job, work 8 hours, make a paycheck, and you'll be able to buy or rent your own space to live in. They can help doing it. Can they not?
Well, unfortunately, you're using common sense, and that's something that our friends on the Ninth Circuit have a great deal of difficulty doing.
I love the circus court. They're God's gift to talk radio, but they're terrible
true.
For people.
Yeah. Well, but see, what happened was back in the 1960s, the U.S. Supreme Court decided a case called Robinson where they said it's cruel and unusual punishment to punish somebody for something that they really can't help, something that they are as opposed to what they do. And, you know, that makes sense. But what the Ninth Circuit did in these cases is it applied that principle in a very strange way by saying that if there are not enough beds available in government-run homeless shelters to house the city's homeless population, then that means that the homeless can't help sleeping on the streets. And so it's just like a person who can't possibly change their conditions or make any decisions or anything like that, and therefore it's cruel and unusual to punish them for sleeping on the streets if there aren't enough shelter beds available in government-run shelters. And so it's a pure mathematical problem to the court. They say you take the number of available shelter beds, and if that's not enough for the entire homeless population, then that means everybody sleeping on the streets is doing so involuntarily, and therefore it's cruel to punish them for that. And that's just nonsense. By that logic, if I get drunk at a bar and I drive home from the bar and I run into somebody as I'm driving home because I'm intoxicated, well, it wasn't my fault because the government didn't provide me with a taxi cab. I mean, that's nonsense. You can make decisions in your life and you should be held responsible, and everybody should be held responsible for the decisions that they make or fail to make in their lives.
In fact, if you're addicted to alcohol, which is sold under license by both the federal and state governments, both of them get involved in licensing it, and then you become addicted to the drug that is allowed to be sold by the government under government license, you could argue, I became an alcoholic because of a government, not government provided, but government sanctioned product, and now I can't help drinking, and when I drink, I can't help drinking and driving because I have no judgment, and
right.
So if I kill people, that's not really my fault, right?
Yeah, that's right. This kind of, this line of logic, if we can even call it logic, would lead to the proposition that there's a get out of jail free card for anybody who has some kind of a compulsion. And I think that that came out pretty clearly during the arguments in the U.S. Supreme Court this week. The justices, particularly Justice Alito and Justice Roberts, really emphasized how nonsensical this idea is. Not just that, that a person should be held responsible for the choices that they make, but also the difference between status and conduct, which seems like a clear thing. The difference between what you are and what you do seems like a clear distinction, but when you start to think about it, it doesn't make a lot of sense, this distinction, because what we are consists of what we do. And so, as Justice Roberts points out, is a person homeless if that person takes a bed at a homeless shelter for a day? Well, now the person has a place to stay, so they aren't really homeless. So, in other words, you can cease to be homeless immediately by simply making one simple decision. And so the idea that a person who's homeless is like a person who, you know, has cancer or something and has no control over it, that idea is really nonsense. We do have the capacity to choose, which means that we can be held responsible, at least when it comes to homelessness.
Well, in fact, taken to its logical extreme, and you'll be able to tell I'm not a lawyer at this point, Tim, does that mean you can't lock up pedophiles? Because the pedophile's wired, he's wired wrong upstairs. He's attracted sexually to children. He acts on that and says to the courts, you can't punish me for being who I am. That's how I'm wired. I can't help it.
That's, in fact, that exact question came up. Justice Alito asked that question to the ACLU's lawyer in the case on Monday. And the ACLU's, she was an outstanding lawyer. She did a great job doing arguing the case, but she did not have an answer for that. And another question is what happens when, you know, the police officer says to the homeless person, look, we've got a shelter where you can go to. And you have to choose whether to accept it. If you don't accept it, however, I'm going to arrest you for sleeping on the streets. Now, then the person says, well, I can't go to the shelter because they won't let me take my dog. Now, is that person involuntarily sleeping on the streets? Or
no.
Has that person made a choice? And
they're
even
making
the ACLU
a choice.
Lawyer, yeah, even the ACLU lawyer had to say the person's making a choice. Okay, now take the next step. Suppose that the cop says there's a shelter bed for you, and the person says, I can't go to the shelter because they're stealing my brainwaves over there. Mm. Right. The differences start to shade into shades of gray that show that this simple dichotomy between choosing things and being incapable of choosing things does not really hold up to scrutiny. Instead, what we need to do is go back to the common sense rule that the government has the right to enforce ordinary non-discriminatory laws that prohibit sleeping in public parks and sleeping on the streets and so forth. And if people have addiction or psychological problems that make it impossible for them to comply with those laws, then they need to get the treatment that will help them to get back on their feet or keep them in a place where they are safe to themselves and safe to the public. That's the only humane solution to this. The idea that the ACLU types are being more humane by allowing people to just live indefinitely in tents in public parks where they're victims of crime and disease and pollution and so, the idea that is the compassionate approach is ludicrous.
And by the way, read the story that Tim Sandifer wrote in the Wall Street Journal, not story, but he's at the Goldwater Institute, but about a man who was murdered in his town, Tim's town, Phoenix last spring, and he was murdered because he was living out on the streets. And it's great. That's compassion. Leave them out there until they die of a drug overdose or maybe get mugged or robbed. Back in a moment. You've got the Lars Larson Show.
Control explained.
Want to stop drunk drivers from killing sober drivers? Ban sober drivers. That's how gun control works.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm always glad to get to your phone calls and emails. Joel, I think I'm going to go to calls, and I want to start with Neary in Seattle. If you'd punch up his call for me, please. Neary, it's Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Prior segment, you were talking about China, limiting China bought or actual foreign bought media influence.
Right.
I was wondering, would you consider George Soros foreign bought for AM radio?
I hate to say it, but George Soros became an American citizen. And I think he did specifically so he could be involved in American media. So I can't say he's not an American. Now, I mean, I don't like George Soros. I don't like the things he does, but he's an American.
And what about the specific bent on the radio when, I mean, political bent, that is, when it's the whole bandwidth is basically bought out? Isn't it like hindering media, hindering free speech?
Well, now, what are you talking about, hindering free speech?
I mean, I know that he bought a lot of radio station, AM radio station.
Yeah, he bought a company called Odyssey that owns a bunch of radio stations. It's actually
basically the authority or the dominant company in that particular niche.
It's not the biggest one, I can tell you that right now. Am I concerned about him owning those stations? Yes. Is he an American citizen and can he do it? The answer is yes. Do I worry that he might try and buy more or try to control the content on those stations? Absolutely, I'm worried about that. So, you know, but what can you do about it if you say he meets the qualifications to do that?
Well, I just wanted to put it out there because people are not aware of whatever is going on.
Well, I mean, I understand you're putting it out there, and a lot of people, we've been talking about Soros' purchase of those radio stations for a good long time. It happened some time ago. But is there anything you can do to stop it? Well, I guess you could. You could file complaints saying, we don't think this radio station is serving the public interest, etc. And that's one way to go after it. But other than that, no. There's not much you can do about it. Do I like it? No, I don't have to like it, but that's where we are right now. Neri, does that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay. Neri, thanks very much. I appreciate the call. Let's go to Jason. Hey, Jason, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
You know, Lars, Israel isn't really as big of an ally as people are thinking. I've made an observation here. When have we ever needed Israel on the front lines of a battle in history? Can you answer that question?
Are we only allies with countries that we have joined us in say defending the United States of America? I mean, Great Britain Great Britain fought us in the Revolution, and then Great Britain declared war on us at one point, and they're now some of our best friends on Earth. So I think setting up that premise, it's a false premise, isn't it? Because you're saying that we're only friends with countries if they have joined us in some kind of war or battle. Do I understand you right?
Well, during World War II, a lot of the Jewish prisoners were conscripted by Hitler to actually fight against the United States and to munitions.
Well, they were locked up in prisoner of war and in internment camps, and later they were killed, and they were forced to do work by the Germans. They weren't just conscripted. Americans can be conscripted by a draft. But Germany did more than that. He took these people and locked them up in camps and forced them to work, sometimes till they were dead, and then killed a great many of them. That's not conscription.
Right.
That's not just conscription. I mean, heck, Russia is trying to conscript young men to serve in its military, but that pales by comparison to what Germany did. So I'm trying to understand your point, though. So we can only be friends with countries that have somehow aided us in some kind of conflict. Is that right?
Well, I think it's a big myth. What they're trying to paint allies with Israel and Ukraine. It's a big myth. These countries aren't allies to the United States. The reason we're trying to protect Israel is because it's a holy site. All these holy sites in Israel, like the birthplace of Jesus, the birthplace of Mary, they can't be bombed. They can't be damaged. It's not
yes,
the people of Israel that we're trying to protect.
Well, hold on. I think you're, where have you ever heard anybody say that, or where do you have any evidence that that's the case? Because I don't see anything that indicates that. The reason, I think I can explain to you the reason that we are allies, or that we are friends with Israel, is that Israel has the same kind of approach, not identical, but the same kind of approach to its government, to its independence. They are a capitalist country. They have some elements of socialism, just like America has some elements of socialism, but they're a capitalist country. They elect their, they choose their leaders. They have representative government. They're like us. We tend not to have as much in common with countries like, say, North Korea, which is not a country that we share a lot of values with. We do share a lot of values with South Korea, and we're friends with them. So your premise that we're only protecting Israel because of the Christian sites that are present in Israel, what would you do to support that point? You got any actual evidence or anybody's statements that would indicate that, that that's why we're doing it?
Well, the Iron Dome, I think, is good evidence of that. They're trying to prevent incoming missiles that do a lot of ground damage, like indiscriminate fire, scorched earth type of...
No, they're trying to stop missiles from dropping on their country because it blows things up and kills people. Right?
Well, that's collateral. That's collateral damage.
Blowing people up is collateral damage?
Holy sites. The Iranians are after these holy sites. They want to destroy Christianity.
Well, I don't doubt that.
They want to erase Christianity.
I don't doubt that the Muslim, a lot of Muslims would like to wipe out both Israel and the United States, which gives us a common cause. The enemy of my enemy is my friend. But you're trying to say the only reason we're trying to protect that piece of ground is because of things that are significant to Christians. America is a Christian nation, but we're not a theological nation. We're not a country that runs based on religious law. An awful lot of our laws have their roots deep in Judeo-Christian ethic, but we're not a country that runs as a theology. And as far as I know, do you know of any religious wars that the United States has ever fought?
We're involved in one now.
Which one?
With the munitions that we're providing.
To defend an ally from an attack by a terrorist organization. And you're saying that's a religious war.
I think Hamas is active in the West Bank as well. They're going to have to invade.
For the most part, it's the Palestinian Authority that runs the West Bank. Hamas has its hands full with Gaza. But you have an interesting set of theories. And, Jason, thank you very much. I appreciate the call. Glad to be with you. Glad to take your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarsen.com.
The Lars Larson Show.
I know y'all think it takes balls to be singing what I'm singing, but I'm just saying what you're thinking.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'll get back to your phone calls and emails shortly at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. As always, naysayers go to the head of the line on this program. Always have, always will. You can send me an email, talk@LarsLarsen.com. You can vote in our poll on X, used to be Twitter. Now it's X. You can find that at Lars Larson Show. Now, we've talked a bit about the fact that over the last weekend, a crazy deal was cut with the, with the acquiescence, I guess we can call it, of Republicans on Capitol Hill, some of them, and some of them voting no, but a lot of Democrats saying, yep, let's send tens of billions of dollars to Ukraine, most of it going to Ukraine, some of it for Taiwan, and some of it for Israel, and nothing for the border, and also not paid for. That is, when you say the federal government has already stretched the limit, spending in deficit about $1.8 trillion in this current budget or the upcoming budget, and then you say, where's the money come from for all this extra stuff? And you say, well, they're just going to print some more. So I wanted to talk to Romita Bacci about that. She's Director of Budget and Entitlements at the Cato Institute. Romita, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
You have a way to suggest that we could actually pay for this and pay for in the sense, not like regular people do, where if you want to buy something, you either have to take, well, a lot of families might do this. They say, well, we need new tires on the car. We were going to go on a vacation. We cancel the vacation, buy the tires for the car. That's kind of what you're suggesting the Congress ought to do.
It's a little bit like that. Basically, what we did is we looked at, okay, where is there some low-hanging fruit since we witnessed Republicans trying to cut overall government spending for this year and fail miserably to the point where former Speaker McCarthy lost his job and current Speaker Mike Johnson has not been able to squeeze any savings out of Democrats in this respect either. So what's some low-hanging fruit that perhaps Democrats and Republicans could both agree on using, reallocating towards, you know, this what they call an emergency aid package, which, by the way, given that President Biden asked for this money for Ukraine back in October, which is 6 months ago now, I don't believe we can call this an emergency. No. They knew this was coming. They could have easily budgeted for this. They just decided not to. But what we were looking at is saying, okay, there was all this money, hundreds of billions of dollars that the federal government sent to states and localities. And initially that money had an expiration date. It was supposed to be spent during the pandemic because the purpose was to prop up state government budgets in case they suffered revenue shortfalls during the time when people weren't working and they were staying home and all of that. But this wasn't intended as a slush fund that states could just use for whatever, whenever they feel like it. Unfortunately, that's what a lot of that money ended up being. And so as of late last year, there was still about $120 billion that was allocated towards the state but had not yet been spent. What we call unobligated balances. So money where the federal government went, hey, you can use this money. And the states went, we don't really know what to use it for. We got plenty of money. and so we said, okay, let's claw that back. But we couldn't even get that done.
I mean, Romina, I know most of your job focuses on the numbers end of this thing, but let me go to the political end. If the Congress were to say, okay, you folks want an aid package to Ukraine. A huge number of the Democrat Party want that. Apparently some, I consider them sellout Republicans want it. Say, fine, we'll pay for it with the money that all your jurisdictions, mostly cities and states, haven't spent from the COVID emergency. It's long over. It would also send a political message. It would say, if you want this thing, you want to send us tens of billions of dollars to Ukraine and to Taiwan and to Israel, fine. But you got to pay for it with something, and we're going to take that money back. I have a feeling the reaction will be, you know, more than just hand-wringing and clutching at pearls.
Yeah. You know, the funny thing, too, was when they decided not to let the COVID money expire as intended, the rule that the Biden administration's put forth, it was actually called the hoarding rule, because that's what states and localities are doing. They are hoarding federal funds after they ran out of ways of wasting that money. Can you imagine that state and local governments could actually run out of ways to waste federal taxpayer dollars? It turns out apparently that is what happened. So they're hoarding that money to use in the future for whatever. And, you know, this wouldn't be so troubling if the deficit was low. Maybe we had something close to a balanced budget, but we have deficits of, you know, 5.6% of GDP, which what that means is those are deficits that the United States generally only has during major crises, the Great Recession, the pandemic, major wars. Those are, you know, crisis level deficits. We are in a relatively, you know, economically prosperous period now, despite the high inflation, which actually in part is contributing to this huge deficit because, of course, the federal government also has to pay higher interest rates on all the debt that it's accumulated. But with debt already as big as the entire economy of the United States, you would think that lawmakers would start to catch on that we are on a very dangerous, not just trajectory, but we're in dangerous territory now. And this additional deficit spending also puts pressure on interest rates, and that affects people's ability to buy homes, to move to new jobs, to get new cars that might require a car loan. All of those things are affected when interest rates are too high, in part because the federal government is pushing them up by taking so much credit out of the markets, by borrowing so much money. And so that's why this is so troubling as well, because we really can't afford this at this time.
No, we can't. But yeah. One last thing. Romina, tell me this. Is anybody on Capitol Hill proposing this to say, well, because they always talk about something called pay-fors, and what they mean by that is a member of Congress walks in and says, I've got a little project we want to do in our state. It's going to cost $50 million. They say, okay, Junior, go find $50 million that we can cut out of the budget to make up for the $50 million you want us to spend. That's what's called a pay-for. There's no pay-for on this, but you've suggested one. Is anybody proposing it to the Congress?
So, yes, Representative Britt Jean, I think, I'm not sure if I'm saying it correctly, he put forth an amendment to use those unobligated balances to pay for this package, but it ultimately failed. So he was overruled. But there are some members of Congress. We're actually hosting an event on May 3rd for members of Congress and their staff to talk about emergency spending and forward-looking reforms to curb this abuse in the future, because emergencies have been one of the key drivers of the rise in the debt. By our calculations, over the last 30 years, we've added $14 trillion. That's emergency spending plus the interest on the debt, $14 trillion to our national debt, which the publicly held debt is about $28 trillion right now. So that's about half of the entire publicly held debt, what the government has borrowed from credit markets, that is as a direct result of emergency spending for COVID, the Great Recession, and you know, shortly after 9/11.
Every time they want to spend money, they just simply declare an emergency. Romina, thanks for the work you do as head of director of budget and entitlements at Cato. That's Romina Baccia. Glad to be with you and always glad to take your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Naysayers always go first on this program. I'll get to calls and everything else up next. You can also send emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And vote in our poll on X. You'll find that at Lars Larson Show. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.
He may talk about serious issues, but even Lars has a sense of humor.
I have a joke for you. The government in this town is excellent and uses your tax dollars efficiently.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's Conspiracy Theory Thursday, and think about this. The state of Washington is now proposing to give special preference based on your skin color if you apply for a license to open up a retail pot shop, a marijuana shop in the state of Washington. The Washington State Liquor and Cannabis Board amending its rules for what they call diversity ownership. The idea is to encourage minority ownership and then remove barriers to licensing. And laughably to me, I mean, it's not really funny, but they want to include criminal history, which would now be a bar to getting a license to sell drugs, illegal drug, marijuana. If you've got a criminal history, that's harder. They want to wipe that out, and they want to change the rules so that if you have brown or black skin, you will be given preference in getting one of those pot licenses. So should a state like Washington give preference for pot licenses to people because of their skin color? My answer would be no. You can answer any way you like. You'll find the question at Lars Larson Show on X. You'll also find it on our website at LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Let's go to, we got a good conspiracy theory. Jacob's on the line listening on the Radio Northwest Network. Hey, Jacob, what's your conspiracy theory?
Well, I'm not completely convinced of this, but you know all the stuff that's going on with Boeing, you know, parts flying off in mid-flight and all that. Well, Donald Trump's private jet is a Boeing.
Yes,
it
is.
And so they've tried to silence him. That didn't work. They're trying to lock him up. That's not working. What's the next option?
Now they want to crash him?
Somebody.
They want his jet to crash?
That's not what I'm saying, but there is that whistleblower that, you know, just so happened to commit suicide right after blowing the whistle, which is kind of weird. And
very weird.
I'm not, like I said, I'm not completely convinced, but I thought it was a good one. I wanted to share that with you and your listeners.
Well, I appreciate it, Jacob, because that guy who took his own life, very sad statement when anybody takes his own life. But you know what I found weird about it, Jacob? This guy did,
what?
I think he did 32. It might have been just 30 years at Boeing. He happily retires. He was a management level guy, so chances are his retirement was pretty decent. So here he is retired. He's 2 years retired, and then he decides, you know what? There's so much that was going wrong there that I saw. I got to blow the whistle. So he spends, I think it was 4 years, trying to get somebody's attention, and he finally gets it with this suit that's brought, and he had begun testifying in the suit. So you'd think this guy just got everything. Well, not everything he wanted, but he had happily retired from a job. He had the kind of pension you'd get, I guess, after, 30 years or 32 years at Boeing. And then he decides to pick up this cause, and he's finally getting to the point where he's making a difference and people are paying attention to him. And he walks out in the parking lot and takes his own life. I mean, that one makes so little sense. Now, maybe there was something going on, but that one really deserves to be investigated. Thanks for the call, Jacob. Let's go to Tyler. Hey, Tyler, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars. So about the Washington business license thing, I mean, I think that there's a real easy way of solving this, and that is to steal a page out of the government, out of the Democrats' handbook, and identify as African-American.
Oh, my God. Wouldn't that be hilarious?
It'd be great.
Hey, wouldn't it be great? You walk in, you say, I identify as black, so you have to give me extra preference points in getting a license. And what do you suppose,
Lars,
they would do?
I believe you can do this all through the internet or mail, so they wouldn't even know until it's too late.
Isn't that nuts? You know what I'm trying to figure out, Tyler? I mean, any idea I ever ran up the flagpole when I was a reporter, I'd go in and tell the boss, hey, we ought to do this or we ought to do that. But you would expect that somebody in the room would say, can we actually bias a state licensing agency in favor of one skin color or another? And then look around the room and say, does anybody else see the problem with giving out licenses either because of somebody's skin color, giving them greater preference to get one? Somebody at that licensing agency, and we've done our due diligence, we've put in a request to the Washington Liquor and Cannabis Board. Now, I'm not holding my breath for them to, to come on, but I'd love to ask them, is this legal to discriminate in favor of people of color and against people of pallor?
Well, remember, Lars, it is the government. So whatever is, really isn't. I don't know how to explain it.
That or rules are for little people. We don't have to actually follow them. We just write the rules the same way the Congress exempted itself from OSHA and EEOC and everything else. Tyler, thanks for the call. Let's go to Ralph. Hey, Ralph in Auburn, thanks for listening on KVI and the network. What's on your mind? Ralph. Ralph must fall asleep. Ralph, I very much appreciate the call. Hey, I got to tell you this. This segment of the show is brought to you by NickShivers.com for an instant offer to sell your home immediately. No showings, no hassles, and you pick the closing date. NickShivers.com for details. Now, I want to give some congratulations to a journalist who's occasionally nice enough to give us some of his time, and that's Jonathan Cho. And he does a great job. He does stories nobody else in Seattle does. But guess what? He scored a big win. He's been tracking this squatter story involving this Bellevue squatter named Sang Kim. Well, you know what Sang Kim had the gall to do? I almost said something else. Sorry. Had the gall to do? He went to court to get a protective order to keep Jonathan Cho, the journalist, away from a squatter. And he was asking the courts, keep this journalist away from me. Guess what? J. Cho won. Congratulations, Jonathan. Good work.
The Lars Larson.
Quietly.
please, ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Look, if you hate cops just because of the cops, the next time you get in trouble, call a crackhead.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
Then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Between all the protests and the teachers' unions and everything else, you might reasonably wonder whether or not taxpayers are getting their money's worth and whether or not Washington State students in public schools are actually getting the education that the state says is their constitutional right. On that note, I want to invite our friend, Washington State Senator John Braun, to the program. Senator, welcome back.
Oh, thanks for having me on, Lars.
In fact, if I remember right, didn't the McCreary decision say that because McCreary essentially said Washington State school students have a constitutional right to an education, right?
That's right. Our Constitution, the Washington State Constitution, says education is our paramount duty as state government, and requires us to fund it. It also requires us to be effective in actually teaching and providing the education that they deserve and are going to need to be successful.
Now, I know that they used the McCreary decision just to pry loose, I don't know, $10, $12 billion out of Olympia. But before we get to this other issue of what's going on, the results that they're producing and the kids who are walking out of school, do you think a group of students could get together and sue the state of Washington to say, you didn't fulfill my constitutional rights, and I've been deprived of those constitutional rights? Would that kind of lawsuit work?
It's hard to know how our judiciary would work these days in Washington, but certainly they'd have a viable chance, and because the truth is, in spite of, as you correctly point out, pouring billions of dollars into our K-12 public education system, the results are not just down, they're significantly down. Prior to the work on McCreary, we were a top 10 public education state in the country. Now we're middle of the pack and we're falling each year based on tests. And here's the really sad part about it. It's not because our students, top students, aren't still doing well. They are. It's because we're absolutely failing with what they call the achievement gap, which means the kids in the middle that are struggling for any number of reasons, they're getting worse, not better, because we are not doing our job to give them the education, as I said, they're going to need and they deserve.
And forgive me for this if you disagree, Senator Braun, but when I see all these protests on the college campuses around the country, you know, in favor of a terrorist group in the Middle East, and it's disrupting activities of those schools, I kind of think there's a on a small scale, a version of that going on where hundreds or thousands of high school students have been walking out of school and ignoring the education that taxpayers are paying for in favor of political protest. And I fault the college administration for not taking control of their campus. Should I equally fault the administration of the public schools for allowing this kind of disruption of education?
Absolutely. And I think, I think there is a small point to be made that they have a constitutional right to freedom of speech, but does not give them the right to disrupt education, both theirs and others. And what I think remains to be seen is whether high school administrators make sure there's consequences for this type of behavior. And so in addition to the fact that, you know, this is in large part anti-Semitic, anti-Israel, in many cases anti-American and pro-terrorist, it's also creating great harm to the education of both the folks participating and those around them.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And Senator, correct me if I'm wrong. Over the years when they've told kids, we have a right to control to some extent your free speech on campus. Because if you decide to show up one day for class in a clown suit and a fright wig or whatever, they can say you can't dress that way. Well, I have a constitutional right. It's expression. You say, yes, but the way you're dressed is disrupting the classroom. Therefore, go change out of it or get out. And that is not interfering with their free speech rights if their free speech is interfering with the classroom, correct?
That's correct. That's absolutely correct.
That's how they've always controlled, you know, if they say you can dress whatever way you want, but if you dress in a way that's disruptive to the classroom, well, if you've got an organized activity, and I suspect that some of these Palestinian protests are being organized outside of the school, but the effect is felt inside the school, that some of these kids are being, you know, led down the rosy path and told, here, go out and do this. It's a righteous cause. And if somebody's making an organized effort to do that, they're conspiring to interfere with the education of kids, a constitutional right.
Yeah, I think you make a good point. I don't know how that would play out in a courts or legal system.
Oh, no, I'm not worried about that. I'm worried about going to the school administrators and say, take control of your campus. And if kids decide we're going to disrupt the campus, then you give them the boot.
Yeah, that's right. That's what I said. They have a responsibility now to make sure that folks who did this type of thing, who organized and participated, disrupted education for our children in certain parts of the state, that there's consequences. That's the bottom line.
Do you have any confidence there will be consequences, Senator Braun? Or do you think most of the school administration is on the same page as the pro-Hamas people?
Yeah, I think the jury's out. I've seen some fairly strongly written warnings from superintendents, but the proof is in the pudding, as they say. I mean, do they actually follow through and insist and take action? I'm not super confident. I'd like to think they will. I think that the kids that are there to get an education deserve that type of administration, one that sticks up for their right to show up in class unimpeded, undistracted, and get the education that they're there for.
You know, it's funny, Senator, a few years ago there was a movie making fun of North Korea and all, Team America. And they said, oh, we're going to send the head of North Korea a strongly worded letter. When I hear about a strongly worded letter from a superintendent but no actual action, I think what that superintendent, who's probably making $200,000-$300,000 a year in benefits, is probably doing is covering his backside. He's saying, I'm not going to actually do anything meaningful to stop this disruption of the classroom, but I'll write a letter so I can always point at the letter and say, well, I did something. I wrote a letter. Well, if you did something that had no meaningful consequence, did you actually do something?
No, not really. I mean, so they got to follow through. They don't follow through, it's all meaningless. And it'll happen again, because if there are not consequences, if we don't hold people accountable for their actions, in particular where some of this stuff is it's not just disrupting, it's actually inciting violence, and that's not allowed in any case. So we'll see. I am not super hopeful, but I think that they're there's 295 districts in our state. Most of them did not participate in this. So I think that's a good sign. But the jury's out on the ones where they had these protests on whether they're going to hold participants accountable for what they've done.
Well, Senator, it used to be the job of reporters like I was. You know, I'm still a journalist, but I'm not a daily reporter anymore. But I'm amazed that the Seattle media, the Tacoma media, the other media don't go right to the school superintendent and say, what are you going to do to stop this? And if they say, well, I wrote a letter. Yeah. What are you going to do that actually stops this? And if somebody wants a suggestion, hey, tell the kids, you decide to walk out of class, you will not come back that day. If you walk out and you disrupt the classroom, maybe you'll be out for the week and we'll let your parents know and it'll go in your transcript. And all the other legitimate things that a school could do to send a message. If you want to disrupt public education that costs tens of billions of dollars and do it to the detriment of your fellow students, you will have some consequences. You will not escape it. So far, near as I can tell, they're escaping it. That's Senator John Braun. Senator, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. Back in a moment, we got to talk about a Tesla auto-driving car on autopilot and a man who's killed, and now the driver of the Tesla is facing murder charges or death to homicide charges. That's next.
Vegan actually is?
They say cows are bad for the environment because all they do is eat plants and fart. just like vegans.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you. And if you listen to the show, you know that I'm an enthusiast when it comes to technology. But I also understand that not all technology is good and not all technology is ready for prime time. But there's a case now, and this is because of an accident that happened about a week ago. And a man ended up dead, Jeff Nissen, 28 years old, dead at the scene of this automobile accident. He was riding his motorcycle, and Carl Hunter was driving a car. He happened to be driving a Tesla. Even though it sounds like he wasn't entirely driving the car, because he said he was on his phone and apparently not paying attention, and by his own account, he was not paying attention, he was driving a Tesla, and the Tesla has what's called autopilot. Now, I don't think most of the stories were complete enough because Tesla has two kinds of cars, autopilot and full self-driving, and there is a difference. Now, I don't know whether or not Carl Hunter was driving the autopilot car, autopilot version of the Tesla, or full self-driving. The stories all say he was driving the autopilot version, and there is a world of difference between the two. And unlike most of the stories you may have heard about what happened on April 19th, last Friday, that this one, I want to explain the difference to you in the Tesla technology. I don't own a Tesla. I've actually driven one on a couple of occasions because somebody said, hey, would you like to drive it and see what it is? I wasn't test driving it. I wasn't even considering buying it. I don't want a battery car. I want a good old-fashioned internal combustion engine. But I'll get to the details on this because they are important, because now authorities have arrested Carl Hunter, 56 years old, because they say he allegedly struck and killed the motorcyclist Jeff Nissen. I don't think there's any doubt that he struck and killed him. The question is, what should he be charged with? But he has now been arrested and charges are being brought in this case. And I know some folks are going to say, well, this is the technology that did this. Well, it's the technology along with the person operating the technology. And I think this kind of question is going to become more and more front and center as we get cars that are more and more self-driving. And then the question becomes, when you're driving a self-driving car, are you allowed to not pay attention? And if somebody gets hurt or killed, is it your fault or the technology's fault? I'm going to go with the driver. I think the driver has to be held responsible. But first, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. If you're a naysayer, I'm going to put you first in line at 866-439-5277. You can vote in our poll on X. You'll find a brand new question every day on X at Lars Larson Show. We also duplicate the question at LarsLarson.com. But about this story, you know, one of the faults I find with reporters who tell stories like this, when technology is involved, you need to make it clear what the technology is. Now, all of the stories that I can find about the death of Jeff Nissen, who died at the scene of this wreck, and about Carl Hunter, 56, who has now been arrested on charges connected to the death of Mr. Nissen. Now, Mr. Hunter, 56 years old, told the cops when they showed up at the scene of this wreck, he said he had consumed alcohol. He said he had a drink. He passed all the sobriety tests. He admitted that he was in his car. He was on his phone. I don't know if he was texting or talking, but he admitted, I'm on the phone, and he wasn't entirely paying attention. Because the way he tells it, he says that he heard a bang, and then his car accelerated, and then it hit the motorcycle. And I imagine the crash reconstruction will probably figure out exactly what happened. But at a guess, if you're letting the car do the driving, and you're looking at your phone, and all you hear is a bang, I kind of suspect that his car might have collided with the motorcycle, and then having collided with it, knocking the man down, it hit the motorcycle again. So we'll see. We'll see what happens there. But here's the important thing. In all of the stories, it identifies the Tesla he was driving as having autopilot. Well, thanks to producer Joel, he went to the Tesla website, and it's not hard to find this. There are two kinds of Teslas. There's autopilot, and there is full self-driving. Now, what does autopilot, if the stories are accurate that were told by the media about this fatal crash last Friday, what does autopilot do? And I'm going to read right from the Tesla site. Autopilot includes the following functionality and features, and there are two of them. Traffic-aware cruise control, which matches the speed of your vehicle to that of the surrounding traffic. And number two, auto steer, assists in steering within a clearly marked lane and uses traffic-aware cruise control. So it's cruise control. I've got adaptive cruise on my car, so I know what it is. If I'm following somebody and he slows down, my car slows down. But you can't let the car drive itself. Now, what does full self-driving capability include? That includes your vehicle will be able to drive itself almost anywhere with minimal driver intervention and will continuously improve in its driving ability. I would imagine there's some AI in there. In addition to the functionality and features of autopilot, full self-driving includes to navigate on autopilot, it will actively guide your vehicle from a highway's on-ramp to an off-ramp, including suggesting lane changes, navigating interchanges, and automatically engaging the turn signal and taking the correct exit. So full self-driving is very different than autopilot by itself. Autopilot, I mean, if you say, who's flying the plane? And they say, it's on autopilot. Well, you have an autopilot that actually will guide the plane, but you're up in the air. You're not on a road. So if it's true, as the stories say, that his car had autopilot, all it had was traffic-aware cruise control that makes your car go the same speed as the cars around it, and auto steer that will assist in steering if it's inside of a clearly marked lane and uses the traffic-aware cruise control. That's all it does. It does not drive itself. And one of the important warnings that is offered up by Tesla, right? Listen to this. Autopilot and full self-driving capability are intended for use with a fully attentive driver who has their hands on the wheel and is prepared to take over at any minute. Now, do I suspect, based on the descriptions offered up in the stories, that Mr. Hunter, the man who's been arrested now in the death of Jeff Nissen, do I suspect he was not fully paying attention? Yeah, I do. Because he says he heard a loud bang, and then his car, he was distracted by his phone when he heard a loud bang, and the vehicle lurched forward, accelerated, and crashed into the motorcycle. That tells me he was looking at his phone, either talking or texting, and not paying attention to his driving. And as a result, Jeff Nissen is dead. And now Jeff Nissen's fiance is saying, you got to change some things. And is it the fault of the technology or the driver who admits he wasn't paying attention? I'm going to side with the driver in this case. Back in a moment. Glad to get your calls at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarsen.com. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larsen Show. Portland's. At least someone has a plan for illegal aliens.
Back in the White House, I will terminate every open borders policy of the Biden administration and begin the largest deportation operation in American history.
This is the Lars Larsen Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larsen Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails. Let me see if I understand this right. We have terrorists in the Middle East who will slaughter people, men, women, children, old, young, it doesn't matter. They will slaughter to get their way. And in America, we have pro-terrorist protesters who are protesting in favor of the terrorists. So that's a problem. And then we have college administrators who won't take control of their campuses and have literally allowed them to become so unsafe that some of them have canceled classes in person and said all your classes will be remote from now on because we're unwilling to control the campus. And I'll throw in, you know, the side I usually side with, the Republicans. We've got Republicans members of Congress who have not stood up and said, if you continue to allow this kind of nonsense, public or private university, it doesn't matter. You're not getting one more dime of federal government money. And believe me, Columbia gets about $500 million a year. Harvard gets about 250 million a year. And the guy who knows this issue better than I do is Rabbi Yaakov Menken, managing director of the Coalition for Jewish Values, which is the largest rabbinic public policy organization in America. Rabbi, welcome back. Now, I would imagine you have an awful lot of people in your synagogue who come to you and say, hey, Rabbi, you're the guy who can help me straighten this out. So straighten it out for us. How do we fix this mess?
Well, you fix this mess by starting to stand up to them. I was impressed that several members of Congress, including Speaker Johnson, went up to Columbia today. More impressed that Mike Lawler actually looked out at the protesters and said, you are reprehensible. If you are supporting a terror organization, if you're supporting Hamas, today my alma mater, Princeton University, actually did the right thing in the morning. They said they had announced to everybody that if you put up tents, if you try to obstruct traffic, we are going to arrest you.
Good.
So they tried to put up the tents, and two people got arrested. Great. Now, that was very well done. However, it is also a violation of obvious campus order, etc., for students to be shouting and drumming and screaming so loud they disturb class. That's exactly what was going on this afternoon. Students reported that they were sitting in one of the lecture halls and they could barely focus on the lecture because of the yelling and screaming going on outside. That's not free speech. That's mob rule. That's a mob disturbance. And by the way, one of the students on campus was flying the flag of Hezbollah. So that's declaring support for a registered foreign terror organization. I believe, as far as I understand, once you're providing support for a foreign terror organization, you're subject to arrest right there. Well, that student was not arrested. That's what needs to start happening. At this point, campuses need to choose between the decent human beings and the genocidal barbarians. The folks cheering for Hezbollah, cheering for Hamas, making the disturbance, either they get arrested or they rule the campus. Well, at Columbia, they decided to let them rule the campus. There's an entire no-go zone on the campus where administrators told USA Today whether or not media is allowed in the encampment is up to the students. See, the students, the inmates, are running the asylum. And obviously, you know, the rabbi of Columbia, the Orthodox rabbi of the OUJLIC program there, told the Jewish students, go home. This is not a safe environment for you. It's not your responsibility to create a safe environment until campus security and the NYPD, and of course the NYPD have to be allowed back in, but until they restore order, you shouldn't be here. The university responded not by restoring order, but by saying, okay, we'll do hybrid classes. So if you want, you can attend on Zoom. So they've had now, effectively, an ethnic cleansing of Jews from the Columbia University campus. And of course, this is something that these encampment folks are cheering and screaming for. So that's how you let the inmates take over the asylum. Columbia is now hopelessly compromised. In fact, there was a university professor who said Monday morning, he said, I'm not going to accept this. I'm going with 10 students, and I'm calling upon the university and NYPD to protect me as I walk straight into the middle of the encampment, because I'm a professor at this university. You know what they did? They deactivated his access card.
Yep. I got to ask you, I mean,
the university response was to deactivate the card.
But Rabbi, and I'll give credit, there's a guy I've known for a long time, just in passing, but Jim Garrity is a good journalist, and he raised this question. He said, why is it you work your entire career, perhaps, become a university president, and then once you get there and you get the nice office and you get the big title and a paycheck, too, but then you decide you don't see yourself as a steward of the institution, and you just kind of go with whatever you think is not going to get you in trouble with the woke crowd. And it makes you wonder. The people who are running these institutions apparently don't care if the inmates run the asylum. And if they don't, why did they ask for the job?
You know, I think that they dove in way deeper than they knew what they were getting into. They weren't anticipating this would come along, and then it did, and they had no idea what to do with it. They're not used to half the campus declaring their hatred for the other half of the campus. And notice, I do say that advisedly, because it's not just about Jews. When the Jews are out of the way, they are disturbing Christmas tree lightings, they are disturbing Easter vigils in St. Patrick's Cathedral. Anybody who hews to traditional values, they're actually out to wage war with. And, you know, that's what's really going on. If you look back at Germany, most Germans didn't actually hate Jews. They weren't actual Nazis, but they made themselves irrelevant by staying out of the way. Bridget Gabriel, who was used, she's a Lebanese Christian, and she was actually in her youth used as a human shield. She declared to a Muslim Arab student, she said, the peace-loving Muslims have made themselves irrelevant because the Muslim terror organizations are running the show. And they're running the show so successfully that now in America, the majority of Muslims in America, at least Muslim Arabs, actually support the Hamas terror attacks of October 7th or believe they can be justified. So they're justifying rape. They're justifying beheading babies. That's not a civilized human being. The majority of Muslim Arabs in America are not civilized human beings. And somebody's going to call me a racist for saying it. No, I'm looking at the statistic here. It's by the numbers. If the majority of them are declaring support or justifying rape and beheading babies, I'm sorry, there's nothing we can do about it. It's fact. Reality apparently has an anti-Muslim bias.
And as you point out, this isn't just an issue for Jewish Americans. This is an issue for all of us because at their heart, these protests are un-American, anti-American. Because you're right. If somehow all these crazies got their way and pushed all the Jews out of the way, they're not going to stop. And the idea of saying, well, we'll negotiate, we'll hand them the Jews, is being a chamberlain to say, we'll let them push all the Jews off campus. Do you really think they're not going to say Christians next and every other religion on the planet?
They're already, unfortunately, you know, university administrators have become part of the problem, not the solution. All of these DEI departments that are ignoring the most persecuted minority in history, you know, they're part of the problem to begin with. And there's huge DEI staffs now on so many of these universities. But, you know, what is their reaction when, if there are not Jews around, they're trying to get InterVarsity Christian Fellowship banned from the campus for having a criterion that we expect our president to be a Christian.
Exactly right. Rabbi Yaakov Menken, Managing Director of the Coalition for Jewish Values. Back in a moment. I'll get to your calls. 866-HEY-LARS. Naysayers always go first. Check out our Instagram feed, and you're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
And now, this musical message to anyone who wants to indoctrinate our school children.
Hey, teacher, leave the kids alone.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show.
And the Radio Northwest Network. My pleasure to be with you, and your calls welcome at 866-HEY-LARS. Emails go to talk@larslarson.com. Naysayers always go to the head of the line. Our poll on X today. And this is fascinating to me. The Washington State Liquor and Cannabis Board is changing the rules so that they want to have more black and brown owners of pot stores, retail marijuana stores. And so they're going to remove criminal history as something that would stand in your way to get a license to run a pot store. They also want to give preference to people of color in getting licenses over people with white skin. I think that's illegal. I think it's unconstitutional, but it violates federal and state law. Should states give preference for pot licenses to people of color? And my answer is no. You can answer it any way you like. You'll find the question at Lars Larson Show. And it's brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. Let's go to Ralph in Auburn, listening on KVI and the Radio Northwest Network. Ralph, what's on your mind?
Hey, you had a guy on talking about asphalt and potholes.
Yep.
I used to work for a company in Gardena, California. We used to tear apart tires, shred them up, and then they used to reuse the rubber in the asphalt. Well, that's happening now. They're doing that now with your asphalt. If you've ever noticed, the asphalt is a lot more tackier.
Pliable.
Your tires grab on better.
Sticky, yeah.
So what I was saying was that he said that when you do potholes, it doesn't last as long. Well, this new asphalt with the rubber in it does stretch with everything, but you can only lay it in when it's
warm
in
weather.
The summertime. You can't do it in the wintertime.
But what are you suggesting, Ralph? Because what he was saying is, we have cities in the especially in the Northwest who've decided to let stuff fall apart and fix the things that need repair, like a pothole, instead of taking good care of the roads to begin with, which I think is actually true. And how does that relate?
Well, I think what they should do is they should start a program on resurfacing every street in the state, and using this new technology with the rubber and the asphalt, and we won't have problems like that in 20, 30 years.
Well, I'm not sure that's true, because, Ralph, what's the usual lifespan of an asphalt road? Isn't it close to 20 years?
Yeah, but with the new asphalt, with the rubber also added in with it, it actually flexes a lot better and it lasts.
Okay, but
much
Ralph,
longer.
What's the expected lifetime? Do you know?
I'd say about 30 to 40 years.
Okay. I'd love to see some backup to that, but that's interesting. Thank you. Let's go to David. David, thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network and KMED. What's on your mind?
Thanks, Lars. First time caller. Appreciate your show.
Thank you, sir.
I'm curious about the just the irony. I found this ironic about the tragedy of the self-driving car. I'm really sick about the whole thing. I'm sorry about that, but
so am I.
I'm a firearms advocate. I mean, if you want one, you can have one. If you don't want one, you shouldn't have one. That's fine.
Yep.
But where they were suing gun manufacturers for the misuse of a legal product, I'm just wondering, well, fight fire with fire. Let's sue Tesla, you know, because it was their car. They got the deep pockets. See, it's ironic, and I'm just wondering if you see the irony in that.
Well, there's a little bit there, because as you notice, I blame the driver. And even Tesla, about this car that was autopilot but not full self-driving. And the guy admits he wasn't paying attention. His car hit a man on a motorcycle, and it killed the man, Jeff Nissen. And you say, okay, who's at fault? The technology of the driver? The driver. The driver of the car is always going to have to take responsibility. Now, if the car malfunctions, and this same thing is true of gun makers, if Smith & Wesson sells me a revolver that was not manufactured the right way, and I fire it and the barrel blows up in my face, that is the manufacturer's fault. If Smith & Wesson sells a revolver and somebody takes that revolver and shoots and murders somebody with it, not self-defense, but murders somebody, that is the fault of the shooter. And in this case, Tesla even warned drivers, you have to be fully attentive, have your hands on the wheel, and be ready to take over when needed. This guy was not. It's clearly his fault.
That's absolute. I agree with you. But what I'm saying, there's people that are actually trying to sue or advocating to sue the gun manufacturer for somebody stealing somebody's gun and using the gun.
Yep.
So I'm just saying fight fire with fire. I just find some irony in all this. And
I find it's very deeply ironic. And, David, thank God there is a federal law that protects gun manufacturers. Say, yep, you can sue a gun maker for making a faulty gun. You cannot sue a gun maker for the evil things people do with it. And the same thing is true of automobiles. If somebody makes a defective automobile and my automobile crashes and I get hurt, then that's the fault of the maker of the car if the car was defective.
Sure.
On the other hand, if a jihadi goes out and gets an SUV, as they have done, and drives through a crowd of people, as they have done both in America and in Europe, and they kill a bunch of people, that is the fault of the jihadi, not the fault of Ford or Chevy or Dodge. David, thanks very much. I appreciate the call. It's Conspiracy Theory Thursday, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show.